Welcome to Healing with David, a space where we lead with the heart, lean into the science, and dig into our soul to address the root causes of our physical, emotional, and spiritual imbalances. But we don't stop there. We go into the inner work, struggles, and shared experiences of walking this path towards our best self because, let's face it, it can get tough. I'm your host, David Delgado, integrative health practitioner and fellow traveler with you on this journey towards optimal health and wholeness. Let's begin. So the term holistic health is used everywhere by practitioners, supplement companies, and anybody who's hoping to differentiate themselves from conventional medicine. Where does this term come from, and what are the broader implications of holism as a way of thinking on your life, health, and worldview? So today I want to lay down the philosophical foundations. I know that that's an unusual term to use in a natural health podcast, but I think it's important here. And I want to help you go beyond the mainstream understanding of holistic health and instead kind of dive deeper into what it means to embody holism as a way of thinking and, more importantly, as a way of being. All right, so let's get started with the big question. What is holism? So it's really the theory that the parts of a whole are an intimate interconnection such that they cannot exist independently of the whole and cannot be understood without reference to the whole, which is thus regarded as greater than the sum of its parts. So we're going to be deconstructing that a little bit. I know that sounded a little bit fancy, but really, I want to frame this in terms of how it's different from the water that we're swimming in, the proverbial water that we're swimming in. So most modern societies are operating according to reductionism, scientific materialism, and atomism. So holism is really kind of a, holism is actually in opposition to reductionism. And a lot of this episode is going to be help you understand why we have many of the issues that we have in our society currently. So holism isn't just about holistic health, but rather it has really far-reaching implications that go into psychology, agriculture, and even governance. So why does this holism thing even matter? Well, once again, a lot of the challenges that we're facing as a collective and also at an individual level are due to our society and the way we are operating not really being in a very holistic fashion. We're reaching the end of the scientific materialist paradigm and the reductionist worldview, and it's really run its course and it's served us well in a variety of ways, but we're moving past it. And I think having awareness of holism versus reductionism is really going to help us understand why we're behaving the way we're behaving and why we have the problems that we currently do. It's going to also give us language to understand and articulate a lot of the shortcomings and a lot of the issues taking place, as opposed to just blaming entities and specific people and saying that they're wrong, when in fact, they're really operating according to a set of principles and a worldview that has really dominated modern societies for the past two centuries. So before we go into the consequences and best practices on actually how to embody holism, I want to show you some examples of a definition. I'm going to show you definitions of science and politics from both a reductionistic perspective as well as a holistic perspective. And I'm going to be reading here. So, okay, from the definition of politics from a reductionistic perspective is politics is about defeating Republicans or Democrats. If we take it from a holistic perspective, politics is about elevating the consciousness of mankind and increasing collective love. Now let's move over to science. So from a reductionistic perspective, the definition of science is manipulating reality through the scientific method in order to exert power over nature to serve human needs. Now from a holistic perspective, the definition of science is the universe becoming conscious of itself as God and love. Pretty big difference, right? So one is defining itself in terms of its own egoic agenda, what serves one part of reality, right? While the other is really taking this view of what is the bigger picture? How am I actually connected to all these other parts of reality and how are we unfolding together. And it's not this like hippy dippy, you know, we're all one type of thing, but really taking responsibility for all of reality instead of just your in-group. So next we're going to go into the price we pay for being reductionistic. And like I said, we are reaching the end of the scientific materialist paradigm, or of the reign of the scientific materialist paradigm, which is why someone like you is interested in personal growth, in holistic health, and in spirituality. So chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, you've personally already felt the consequences of reductionism, whether it be by going to a conventional medical doctor and, you know, them telling you, well, okay, that's not my specialty, you just go to a different doctor. Or it might be through some other means, right? So when it comes to specifically to natural health and to chronic health conditions, the biggest drawback of reductionism is the belief that if you cannot formalize something such as a condition, emotion, or a trauma, then it doesn't exist. For many of us, me included, I spent years going from doctor to doctor, never getting any answers, being kind of, you know, punted from neurologist to the cardiologist to the allergist to who knows what doctor, because none of them or all of them said, oh, well, this isn't my problem. This is not really within my scope of practice. But then they gladly took my money and then they sent me on my way. So go ahead and comment below if that was your situation, because I've definitely heard that quite a bit. And that is the scientific materialist paradigm, or reductionism, really at its best, is taking this very narrow scope or worldview and really not taking responsibility for the big picture here. Okay, so enough of that little tirade or rant, but I'm going to give you some other examples of the price we're paying for this reductionistic worldview. So let's start here. Organizations and government that largely disregard how interconnected we are, taking decisions that may be impacting weather patterns or economic markets in faraway lands. So that one's pretty obvious. We've all known about that one, but we don't really seem to map it to a lack of holism. Let's look at the individual level. So most people have fragmented minds due to dividing their rational selves, you know, different for or their rational selves in opposition to their emotional selves, this idea that you can do this. And as a result, they develop these unconscious shadows, these aspects of themselves that they've disowned. They may also just have unprocessed emotions because they're unwilling. They have a lot of shame in facing this. And this is a really inherent part of who we are as humans. And so really this dysfunction where we have to wear a mask in certain areas of our life and be very kind of emotionally sterile is quite problematic. And, you know, this, you know, if you think about, for example, like why the existence of alcohol and drugs and why people imbibe, you know, 2 to 3 days a week, the weekend is almost a designated time for intoxicating yourself with whatever your drug of choice is. A lot of this is largely due because there's so much stagnant energy, really dense energy from this pattern that has been imposed from this reductionistic worldview. Next is science and spirituality view one another as enemies. And therefore, when you ascribe to one, you're an enemy of the other. This results in a very incomplete understanding of reality. If you're one of these atheistic Sam Harris type people or Richard Dawkins, where you only rely on science, science is very powerful. Don't get me wrong. I love science, but it isn't the right tool for every job. If you're one of these very new agey spiritual people, you're like, oh, science, forget those people. Well, you're missing out on a lot of very important ways of understanding reality as well. And these two need to actually merge. The next is around the demystification of the world. Reductionism or atomism has demystified everything, meaning reduced everything to like simple or chemistry related explanations, to the point where there's no spirit, love, or heart really left in the world. This one's kind of a hard one to articulate, but you know, a lot of people are just depressed and disconnected from beauty, awe, and their natural environment. I oftentimes opt for remystifying the world, for actually acknowledging what a miracle, what a mystery existence in fact is. And a lot of times this demystification has really led to these subpar explanations where we cognitively or conceptually think we know things, and as a result, we're really not present with what's here in front of us and how amazing that in fact is. Next is this technocratic view of society and evolution. It's the idea that there is nothing more to existence or to society than building more technology and more economy, that as a collective, all we need to do is build more wealth, keep growing the GDP, and keep building technology. And while I'm deeply appreciative of technological innovations, for sure, many things will never be solved by technology. And the result of this technocratic view is that we're very disconnected from ourselves and from each other. And most people are really living this very mechanical life that is truly quite lifeless in many ways. And it's really no wonder that we're very depressed and anxious as a whole. Next is this division between fact and feelings. And really, our feelings influence our facts, to a degree that most people don't really want to acknowledge. Next is that feelings or emotions only reside in the mind, when in fact, there has always been this division between mind and body. And as we know, if you've studied kind of somatic healing or somatic therapies, our emotions or feelings oftentimes live in our bodies first, even if they don't feel very present in our mind. So another one is the prioritization of hedonism, money, technology, pleasure, data, and facts above else. If you were to go to university and say that you wanted to study love, people would just completely laugh at you. But this is what we seek most in our lives, and it often deludes us how we actually attain it. Next is high technical expertise, but very little big picture thinking or big picture wisdom. We have lots of scientists and medical experts that understand a small subset of reality or even a small subset of health, but don't understand the big picture and how these things intertwine. If we look at our healthcare system, this is a pretty good example where we have, in here in the US especially, a large array of specialists and very skilled doctors and practitioners. However, if you've had a chronic health issue that doesn't neatly fit into the disorders that they typically treat, you've probably been handed from one doctor to the next doctor to the next doctor and have mainly been given a slew of pharmaceuticals or very kind of half-assed advice, excuse my French, for a lot of these issues. And another one related to the healthcare system is that we have this healthcare system that is looking at diseases or imbalances linearly. It's ignoring the relationship between toxic chemicals, processed food, and the way that we've designed our life, disease. So there isn't really this connection between kind of these lifestyle illnesses, the way society is structured, or even these philosophical concepts of reductionism and chronic illness. Another one is that we know that the top causes of chronic illness are related to lifestyle and nutrition, but most doctors, including specialists like a cardiologist, are not educated in nutrition, supplementation, or movement, which are really the remedies that are going to prevent their patients from getting these diseases in the first place. Next is that science strives to understand everything, but because it is not everything, it only gives you an incomplete picture of reality. As a result, most people are completely unaware of other modes of understanding reality, of post-rationality through meditation, maybe through channeling, through other ways. And so as a result, we're locked in only being able to use the mind. This is one of the reasons that many people struggle with concepts like presence, conscious awareness, with meditation, with just being in their body and connecting with their intuition at a very basic level. And this is particularly true for these hyper-rationalistic men in particular. So I was definitely one of those. Go ahead and drop a comment if you're relating to that experience. So before we move on, I just want to state that I'm not trying to demonize the reductionistic scientific materialist paradigm. I am trying to bring awareness of its limitations so that we can move past it. I personally was one of these very reductionistic, scientifically minded people for a while, especially in the early years of my journey. I was an atheist for a very long time, and that had a time and a place, and it served me well, but it is very limited. And so I'd advise you that if you are listening to this and you're maybe having some resistance to what I'm saying, to really, it's not so much about abandoning rationality and science, but really kind of embracing other modes of understanding reality and embracing holism. So holism is actually going to include the reductionist scientific paradigm when appropriate, but it's also going to include other things too. So what does reductionism cause us to believe? It causes us to believe that everything can be understood through science and rationality, that diseases can be reduced to one specific linear cause, and we can cure disease or imbalance by manipulating that mechanism, usually through pharmaceuticals. All right, next let's go into some examples of reductionism. So I'll be reading from a list here. So one is going to be topic voters, so people that just vote on one topic. Why is this reductionistic? Well, it's reducing effective government down to how the government handles one issue. And obviously governing an entire country, even a city, is infinitely more complicated than that. A truly holistic person would not be a topic voter, would not be swayed in one direction or the other due to someone's stance on one topic alone, without accounting for how they stand on a variety of different issues. Sorry, I just have this prebiotic soda here. Wow. So nationalistic movements. I know that this one's going to be a little bit more controversial. I don't stand on the left or the right, so that's not my intention here. It's really to look at the bigger picture. So with nationalism, usually it's kind of like a, you know, what's best for your country at the expense of other people. It doesn't really matter what's going on in the rest of the world or how your actions affect others. But that is simply not the case. We know this. This has proven true time and time again, where your actions do affect others. And more importantly, whatever you do eventually comes back to bite you in the ass. So it's not as simple as being selfish in the short term. You think you can get away with being selfish. The long term, not as much. Psychiatry. So psychiatry, reducing depression down to a dysfunction in your serotonin pathways without looking at things like your gut health, your nutrition, your lifestyle, and many other factors. So this has resulted in many people being on antidepressants or being stuck in therapy for years and not really getting any true relief, because their root cause may not have been as simple as a disruption in their serotonin pathways. So this is a very reductionistic view of, let's move on to the spiritual people. So with spiritual people, dismissing science and the scientific method because it doesn't align with their ideology, because they don't actually want to understand the scientific implications of things. They don't care if, like, let's say chakras aren't supported by science, or they want to believe in energy medicine, but they don't really want to actually take the time to learn how to, let's say, do a study on that, or to actually look at the studies on meditation or breathwork. When it comes to nutrition, this idea that good or effective nutrition is reduced to results such as fat loss, muscle gain, or elevating ketosis without regard to what this nutrition plan does to the rest of your body. So looking at one metric and saying, okay, well, this is what health is, whether it be elevating your ketones or losing weight. And ultimately, a lot of these things are not healthy in the long term. So this is a very reductionistic view on nutrition. We see this with a lot of fad diets, with the South Beach diet, with paleo diets, with even some ketogenic diets. Many of these, they come and they go because they take this reductionistic approach. So here I listed some examples, include keto, carnivore, veganism, which a lot of times is more aligned with the ideology instead of the health components, and a lot of, you know, low carb diets. Next is going to be, and go ahead and drop a comment if you resonate with that one, because I know that that's definitely, you know, one that's relevant for many people. Next is this like burnout workaholic culture that supports the bottom line. So if you have a company, you may work your employees into the ground. Some famous CEOs like Elon Musk or Steve Jobs are pretty famous for this, where they work their employees into the ground, but they're not really looking at the long term. They're not really seeing how the well-being of their employees is actually going to contribute to the productivity of their companies in the long term, right? So that's a very reductionistic, very narrow, myopic point of view, not really looking at the whole. And on top of that, they're not even looking beyond their company. They're not seeing how the way that they treat employees really has a broader impact on society. If they have these overworked employees, then they're going to go home and they're not going to be present for their family. They may come home angry or sad. They may not be emotionally available. And then this is going to harm their children or their family. And then these kids, you know, bring that into their environments and so on. And so this really has a cascade effect, especially for these larger companies. They're not really seeing their broader impact beyond the narrow metrics of their company. When we look at geopolitics, waging wars without addressing the subtle, complex, moving parts of a certain region and the cultures within that region, understanding the level of psychological development using a model like spiral dynamics or Suzanne Crook-Greuter's stages of ego development. So that's an important one. Science ignoring consciousness, kind of disregarding these issues. Like, oh, that's not important. I don't understand what consciousness is, but I can just carry on doing my scientific method on my narrow sliver of reality. Next is believing science is one thing and spirituality is something else. Next is scientific studies that are narrow in scope and misconstrued to support egoic agendas, such as some fad diet or some company or some product that your company makes. So this is a very common one where, you know, a lot of people rely heavily on scientific studies, but these scientific studies are funded by people with agendas and they are manipulated to produce a very specific result, or they're discarded if they don't produce that result that supports their agenda. Okay, so at this point, I think you have a pretty good idea of what holism means, what the price we're paying, what price are we paying for not living in a holistic way, both at an individual and a collective level. But let's kind of get into the tips here. Let's kind of understand, how do we develop a holistic approach to life? Not just holistic health or holistic wellness, but how do we embody holism as a way of being? This is much deeper than just, you know, eating a salad bowl, right? Okay, number one is going to be asking higher quality questions. So really kind of asking yourself, how does my action affect the whole? Really kind of being able to contemplate very deeply. And this is, you know, a practice that we should all cultivate on our own. And I'm going to have an episode where specifically break down what contemplation really means and what is a contemplation practice that you can start to implement in your own life. Next is developing our intuition. We're so reliant on the rational thinking mind that we've really shut down and disconnected from intuition. And this is it at our own peril. Our intuition is oftentimes inherently quite holistic. So that's an important one as well. Not settling for linear reductionistic answers to complex questions. So when you address something like, let's say it could be geopolitics, could be your health, really not allowing yourself to fall into the trap of just taking these three sentence answers and taking those as absolute truth. They may be part of the truth, but they're unlikely the complete picture. So being able to dig deeper, or just recognize that this is just one perspective and there's probably a lot more to this than this particular answer or that this particular knowing has to offer. Studying systems thinking. So this is a very important one. Today I've been kind of injecting a little bit of systems thinking throughout the episode, but studying systems thinking is very important. One such method could be spiral dynamics, could be integral theory as well, right? So really understanding how systems work and interact with one another. Going beyond your self-biases of your community, nation, ethnicity, or other in-group. So really starting to think beyond what is beneficial for your immediate survival. And when I mean your survival, you could think of it as your personal survival as an ego, but also the collective egos that you are part of. So could be your national identity, could be your ethnic identity, could be your company, and so on. Could be your industry, and so on. So next is judge and critique less and find common ground with those that think differently than you. So being able to understand that there are multiple perspectives in this world. There are multiple ways of being right. And most people are coming from the perspective of egoic survival, there are their own self-biases. So being able to see, you know, those that think differently than you as other people that you want to be aligned with, right? And then the last one, when it comes to natural health in particular, is really asking yourself the question, like, if I apply this principle for the next 50 years, what results might I get? And the reason I ask this is because a lot of times we're focused on the near-term results. We're not really looking at the long-term play, specifically with nutrition and movement. And of course, as you get older, you're going to have to, you know, adjust that or calibrate because you have different needs as you age. That's very obvious. However, really taking the long-term view. So people that are taking things like Ozempic, or people that are, you know, I don't know, skipping breakfast and having a coffee every morning, and that's how they get through the morning. So is this really going to be in your best interest in the long term? All right, well, that's it for today. I hope you were able to broaden your perspective today and get an understanding of what holism is, what reductionism is. So also understand why many of the issues we're facing are due to a reductionistic or atomic mindset as opposed to a holistic mindset. Also, hope that there was enough in there to help you start to understand how to apply this in your own life, both for your physical and mental health. And lastly, go ahead and comment below with any questions, thoughts, and ideas regarding this episode. This is episode 2 of Healing with David. Very excited to have completed this one and would love to hear what you think about this episode or ideas for subsequent episodes. Once again, you can comment below or you could use the Google form in the description. May you each find health, meaning, and love. I'll see you soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Healing with David podcast. For more information on my coaching programs, courses, and other offerings, you can go to mokshalife.co. That's M-O-K-S-H-A life.co. You can also find me on Instagram and TikTok at the handle Healing with David. Looking forward to seeing you in the next episode. May you be well.